overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
Thank you. It's beautiful. So it's so good to see everybody here and the new people that have come, and there are no accidents that you're here on this Sunday morning. So I'm doing a series in January. Usually in religious science communities, Centers for Spiritual Living, they regress, or I guess return, to the first four basic chapters of the science of mind: the thing itself, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. And I did that for like 29 years. It's my 30th year in ministry. So I opted to do something a little different, and yet realizing that it all kind of dovetails. This month, I'm going to do what I call a discourse on love. And then I prepared the titles for February, and because that's the month of love, I'm going to speak about the wise heart. Because as that song revealed, there is only love. In the book of John, it says God is love. So the thing itself, the very first chapter of the science of mind, is love. And as Ernest Holmes says, all is love and all is law. So the love operates through the law of mind. So they come together. So could we dare to evolve to a higher order of seeing? I'm beginning to realize that at age 71, that's what it's all about, is to evolve to a higher order of seeing. We're doing this incredible class now called The Simpler Way. I titled it The Simpler Way because truth can't be complicated. If it's too complicated, if it's too cerebral, the mind can't understand the truth. They say using the mind to understand the truth is like taking a flashlight to the sun and trying to illuminate the sun. This can't get it. But there is something that is within us that can. It's the very thing that we are. In the beautiful satsang we did this Wednesday night, this young 15-year-old girl shared with us that I can understand all the thoughts that you have. And as a young woman, she said, I try to meet those thoughts in a skillful way, but there's something behind those thoughts that always seems to be guiding me. And I heard from that innocent, beautiful soul that she has tapped the infinite mind, which the local mind sometimes masks. And so what we're doing in all the classes we do here is to try to the try is a lousy word to use. What we are doing is seeing through the conditioned, patterned way of thinking. Richard Rohr calls it the binary mind. The binary mind, it says, this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad, and usually my way is the right way and everybody else's is the wrong way. And so this binary mind tries to fix things, control things. You might call it the egoic mind. And the egoic mind, which we all have, has three aspects. We learned that in the last class we taught. The first part of the egoic mind is the manager. Anybody got a manager in there? Going to manage everything, have a list, make sure we do it right, manage others, manage ourselves, manage the finances, manage everything. Then there is the other part of the egoic mind, which they call the exiled ones. This is the one that I seem to be dealing with because I was a master of repression. That little boy, you know, Bill Savoy has a little 9-year-old boy that likes to play chess, and he's coming up in full force. Isn't that great? We don't have to exile him anymore or her anymore. And in all my counseling, what I tend to see is those exile parts surface now. Not to be shamed again and put back into exile, but to be embraced and included and loved and to be integrated so that we become whole human beings. And then the last aspect of the egoic mind is the firefighter consciousness. I'm going to fix the world. Anybody can relate to that? I'm going to make sure those problems are no longer there because I've got this part of me that's going to take on the world. I saw it when I was visiting Jane in the hospital, the oncologist. We're going to fight that cancer and we're going to beat it. Nobody ever says we're going to surrender to it and allow life to, because that's not the way we do in this Western world. We can see how we run our country. We take on challenges and we fight them because we're number one, and all that way of thinking. And that's the egoic mind. So to transcend the binary mind, Richard Rohr says, if you're going to only live from the egoic mind, it's like you're living right up here in this quadrant of your head. And he says, and he quotes scripture a lot, and I hesitated to use this book, but what I love about it, he says, when you can hear an old idea with a beginner's mind, that old idea has grace in it that abounds. You go, oh my God, that's what it's saying. The old idea has some depth to it, like the kingdom of heaven is within. You know, he said, Richard Rohr says, so many people want to delay their gratification for someday when they die and they go to the kingdom of heaven, which is out there in the sky. And he said when he was at Gethsemane, which is this monastery up in Kentucky where Thomas Merton lived, he met what they call a recluse who lived in the forest. And the recluses would only come out at certain times. And they said, you always were curious when these monks would come out of their reclusive place in the forest, were they crazy or were they glowing? If they were crazy, it was driving them mad. But if they were glowing, it's because they had landed in this deep communion with the divine. So he said, I'm up there on retreat and I'm walking through the forest and I see one of the recluses walking through the land. And he said, oh my God, this one is glowing. And so the recluse came up to him and he says, Father Richard, I want to say to you that you speak all over the world and you have a message. I have something I want you to share with you to say to the world. And he said, yes, I'm surprised that you even know who I am. And the recluse said, God is not out there. And he walked away. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Meister Eckhart said, if God were out in the sky, he would be, you know, on some cloud somewhere. You know, it's Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within and it's all around you, but you don't see it. He said, if it were in the sky, this is in the Gospel of Thomas, the birds would get there first. And if it were in the ocean, the fish would get there first. But I tell you, it's within you. So what if we could find this something that is within us? And the only way we're going to do that is to turn away from the world in a strange sort of sense and turn within, and yet recognizing that the world holds the divinity, that spirit and matter are one. So I had this very interesting experience with rock. It was, you know, everything is here for us, Jody said at the revealing service. And I tend to my little exiled boy who had abandonment issues, he would find ways for his little boy to feel complete. And when I was in Colorado 2 years ago and he surfaced, he found himself running away from the group because that's what he did when he was little. And he went to the trees, which he always went to. And he went to Grandfather Tree, and at the base of Grandfather Tree was what he called rock. And he picked up rock, and rock became his companion. He would hold rock, but he realized rock was holding him. And he carried rock with him to conferences. Rock even had a face, and he would look at that face, and he would smile to it. And when we were in Boston at the Lenox Hotel, I carried rock with me to the family reunion. I thought he might call me, because you know how families are. And I thought this might be a balancing force, but rock was left at the hotel. And I found myself going through the guilt that I had abandoned rock, you know, and it's good because I got to experience my own contraction around that until I realized I had made a special rock. Seamus reminded me, in oneness, you can't have special rocks. They're all part of rock. And so I got to let go of my attachment to a form and know that I had the memory of that intimacy, even with something as humble as a rock. So Richard Rohr in this beautiful class, we showed a video. He was on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah Winfrey last June. He's 76 years old. He recently had a heart attack. I had a heart attack 2 years ago. So Oprah asked him, she said, did something happen after this heart attack? And he said, well, without sounding cliched, life becomes very precious when you've had that threshold of experience of coming close to death, but still being here. And he says, what I can tell you is how fragile this life is and how sacred it is. And when you see it as fragile and sacred, then there is something, for me anyway, it becomes so blessed to have every day. My beloved Bert, he has what they call old dog syndrome. And for those of you who have old dogs and old cats, I realize my cat had it as well. And the symptoms are that they collapse. And you think they're going to die, but they don't. They resurrect. They come back. And so I want to tell everybody, I want to shout it from the rafters. Don't put them down. They will rally. They'll be a little diminished, Maybe I'm a little diminished after the heart attack, but I don't think so. My heart is so damn open. You know, when I go see Dr. Krasnow, my cardiologist, he said, so do you have any symptoms? And I said, every day. I'm just grateful to be alive. And he says, well, that's not normal. And he says, but then again, nothing about you is normal. So, but what if that is the upshot? So we showed this little video of Oprah, and those who are recovering Christians, I think, had a moment, because he talks about what he calls a kindergarten spirituality. And he says that's the spirituality that wants to make Jesus as the only way, that wants to turn Jesus into somebody who has a lot of judgment when his whole message was not to judge. And so he talks about the Anointed One. And the Anointed One, he says, yes, it's where the Old Testament and the New Testament come together. And it's where God became flesh, if you will, where spirit moved into form. But he said Jesus wasn't the only way. So here's an old idea getting new footing. And he said, actually, it started with the story of Jacob in Genesis. When Jacob is lying, he's sleeping, he's going to meet his brother Esau. They talked about a possible battle between the two brothers, Jacob and Esau. So he goes to sleep that night very troubled. And in that dream state, that's why dreams are so significant, there is a ladder that appears. You know the famous story. And the angels of the Lord are going up and they're going down. And Jacob says, he has a battle with one of the angels, and he says, I will not release thee until thou blesses me. In other words, whatever struggle you're going through, open to the blessing, because it has a gift for you. And when Jacob woke up from this, he went, Eureka, you were with me all along, and I didn't know it. For those of you who are chasing after enlightenment, it's right there. Those of you who are looking for love, it was right there all along. And this was what the angel left him with. His name changed from Jacob to Israel. Isis Ra Elohim, the universal human, child of God, Israel. And then, this is what Richard Rohr says, then he anointed the rock. He anointed the rock. Basically, he was saying that the Christ is in the rock. It is not just Jesus. It's in the rock, it's in the tree, it's in the earth. And when we have the consciousness that it is all the universal Christ, he said, can you imagine how we'd be with our environment? That's the shift that we have to take. We have to move out of the idea of me as separate self into the realization that we're the universal human, homo universalis, as Barbara Marx Hubbard would say. And so Richard Rohr said, I'm here at 76 years old to speak the truth, because if I don't speak it now, when am I going to speak it? And I'm sure I piss a lot of people off by saying this kind of language. And I don't want to discount Jesus, because they're not one or the other. They were complementary. The universal Christ, which exists everywhere, he was the example, the beloved example. And when you see someone who is the embodiment of that love, and I hope maybe I am that for some of you, you realize that this is the same love that you are. You come to meet itself. So in his latest book, The Universal Christ, he does the dedication to his dog Moonbeam, a 15-year-old black lab who made her transition shortly before the book was published. And he said, this book is dedicated to Moonbeam, who every time she would come running to me, I saw the universal Christ in the love look in her eyes. Anybody can relate to that? Now, if you can find the Christ, even in a four-legged, a two-legged, or maybe even a rock, it's because that love is awakening within you and within me. You know, we use the word love kind of freely, because we think about it as that personal love. You know, and the Greeks had three ways to approach love. They called eros love, which was this intimate love we have with form. Then they talked about philos love, which I think is one of the highest, which is the brotherly love, where we are each other's friend. We are each other's reflection. And then, of course, there's the agape love, which is the spiritual love. You know, the love of the one that's within the many, and we are in it and of it. And what if all three could exist simultaneously? So you didn't have to say one was higher and one was lower, but they were all part of this mystery. Last week, because Paul Fulford is my dear brother, I read to him a letter from Albert Einstein delivered posthumously after he died, saying that the universe, the greatest force in the universe, is love. And imagine if we can harness that, how we would be with one another. And so I pulled the little book on love back out, and this is something that inspired me this morning. Each of us is a unique reflection of a whole, and it is our purpose to discover that single essence within us. Oprah Winfrey called him. She said, you're just a little mystic, aren't you? And he says, well, Oprah, I humbly, what I would say to that is, he said, I'll tell you what I think a mystic is. He said, a mystic is someone who sees things in wholes and not in parts. Now, what if you knew that we're part of the whole, the gestalt of life, that we're part of every koala bear and we're part of every part of the earth, that we're not separate from it? When you don't see yourselves as separate, he says, then God doesn't have a Muslim religion or a Christian religion or a Jewish religion. God has no religion. In fact, he said, let go of the idea of God altogether and know a presence that's intimate to you, that's everywhere. And he's saying that same thing. There is this wholeness that we must discover. It's the essence within us, the kingdom within us. And from there, we are then able to become our full potential. We are able to glimpse a larger picture and to feel more readily our connection with the whole. Plato says we're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. That's a really profound thing. We need the Sangha. We need the community. A flower needs the butterfly in order for it to be pollinated. The butterfly needs the flower in order for it to get nectar. So what if this interconnectedness is being revealed everywhere if we have but eyes to see? Now, Jesus said that again and again in his healings. And he would say, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, was his question. So what is the implication there? We need to get some new eyes. We need to see with a different vision. We need to hear things differently. Yeah. So he goes on to say this. Knowing that all adversity has a higher purpose is essential on the spiritual path. All adversity has a higher purpose. Mark Nepo, who suffered from cancer twice and recovered, he said, could we embrace the grace of love which will transform the way we see the experiences that we go through? Now, beloved Marie went through a challenging 3 years, and she came out the other end changed. She sees things with a softer vision. It wasn't something that happened to her. It really was grace unfolding and expanding her perception. And sometimes we have to get stunned a little bit. Richard Rohr tells the story of, in order for to see with awe and surrender, he says, the ego doesn't like awe, and the will doesn't like surrender. But in order to experience the awe, oftentimes we have to be stunned. Life has to give us a 2x4. I know it. I'm a kind of a 2x4 guy. My lover has to walk out on me in order for me to realize that wasn't the source of my love. It was here all along. Some of us need the 2x4s. I need to nearly die at a job that I say is killing me in order for me to say, you know, I'm going to leave that job. Someone asked the question, how can we help people when they're struggling in life to empower them that they can have something different? There was a woman that came who still comes here. She was in a toxic marriage, and all she did was complain about this marriage. And I remember in my office, she was crying and ranting about this situation. And I just said one little phrase, why don't you leave? That day, she left. She used to tell herself the story, well, he won't be able to live without me. He thrived without her. She thrived without him. One thought, that's all it took. One action. So Richard Rohr, he lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he calls his center the Center for Action and Contemplation. He said, I wanted to have some movement in it. So he says, people ask me, well, what is more important, the action? Jesus said, by their actions ye shall know them, or contemplation, going within deeply to the oneness of being. And he said, well, the answer is very simple. The most important word there is and. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So, maintaining a sense of grace, acceptance, and ease allows us to face the hardships we have in life, knowing that they are part of a larger plan to strengthen both our character and to enhance our soul. Wow. Then when life gives you these growth opportunities, this is how the soul grows. You know, sometimes we have to be willing to let go of first base to get to second. And if we're still clinging to first base and we're wanting second, we find ourselves in this place where we can't make that decision. Now, most of you have stepped out of the kindergarten spirituality. I had a young lady in my class for the first time on Tuesday night. She says, you don't remember me, do you? Ashley, are you here? It was so sweet. And she said, I showed up at one of your Sunday morning revealing services. She says, I'm an evangelical Republican. And something in her awoke that she doesn't want to condemn, she doesn't want to judge, she wants to be free. And what that freedom is, as Richard Rohr says, it's the freedom from your own self. It's freedom from the tyranny of your own belief system to see things with new eyes. And once you make that commitment to seeing things freely, then when the new idea comes, it sets you on a path of expansion, a path of freedom, a path of discovery, a path of intimacy with the universe. And Richard Rohr stresses that so many religions, he says, they are all about creating a sense of belonging. I belong to the Whitesburg Baptist Church, and I've been a member for 30 years. I belong to the Unitarian Universalist Church. I belong to the Episcopal Church. And he says, that's fine to belong to a long-standing, I'm an Orthodox Jew. He says, but what we're all about is transformation. We're not about creating a container that defines you. We're about, in a way, breaking all the containers that hold you back and to discover the love that you are, the love that we all are, that needs no container to separate it or define it. Remember, it's about oneness. So she goes on finally to say, in the end, we all are containers of love, and we need only to activate that love that's already inside us. Think of moonbeam. Do you have your own moonbeam that activates that love? This is accomplished by recalling a feeling of pure love, such as that of a playful puppy. Anastasia got the puppy that I wanted that my husband wouldn't let me have. And I see her glowing. And when that little dog named Pepper now gets in the mud puddle and is having a gay old time, I find myself, I watched that maybe 100 times because she was taking me into that playfulness of spirit. My Zen calendar, which can be a little pious sometimes, said, and this was Mencius, the great Roman philosopher. He said, every man needs to have the heart of a little boy. Every woman needs to have the heart of a little girl. And everyone needs a puppy because it's the best medicine. And when they want to put you on Zoloft, say, give me a puppy. Absolutely. So as we consciously generate that love in our hearts, we actually become the love that we are. It's so damn simple. That's why I'm calling the class The Simpler Way. You know, once this love starts to flow within the heart, it's what we are. And then Dr. Ernest Holmes says, and when this love awakens, and when we grow up from making it all about ourselves, because there really is no separate self, my favorite Zen saying is, you know why you're so miserable? Don't take this personally. Because 99% of the things that you talk about are all about you, and you aren't. Let those who have ears to hear hear. So what if what we are is this love? We're not this separate self that has its tirade of stories and woundedness and betrayals. We're not the problem that needs to be fixed. We're the very love that's coming to awake within us. So she goes on to say, as we consciously generate this love in our hearts, we become what we are. And through practiced awareness of the heart's field, we can actively expand it through expressions of joy, love, and gratitude. And the more of us who accomplish this, then the more loving our collective world will ultimately become. So Gigi asked me this question after we did our world peace meditation. She said, I've been doing this since 1984, and so have I. And she says, what good has it done? And I said, can you imagine the world had we not been doing it? Can you imagine Alabama had we not had this center for lovers to come and meet? You know, all it takes is two or more that are gathered with an intention to serve the love that we are. And the greatest way to serve something is you have to surrender into it. Dr. Ernest Holmes, and you hear the old ideas with fresh eyes. He says, you can have as much good in this world as you can take. He says, but you can only take what you can embody. So it's not about a doing, it's not about a taking, it's about embodying something, eureka, that's already here, that we already are. And we have to learn a new way to pray. A new way to pray. And Richard Rohr, it's kind of like a little slap to us religious scientists, because he said, so many people pray in a transactional way. We pray for health, we pray for wealth, we pray for the right and perfect mate, we pray for some outcome to happen. And he says, that's malpractice. That's the old way. That's limiting God. And what's really limiting is you're trying to outline what it's supposed to look like. What if that one that you're praying that maybe Mr. Right will work out isn't the right one for you? And you're trying to get that relationship to work out. I remember praying for a job to manifest, which would have been the worst job on the whole planet for me. But I wanted the universe to conspire with my belief system and to make X, Y, or Z happen. I didn't have a clue what was the best thing for me. So here's how he approaches prayer. This is the class guy, Richard Rohr, so clear. He says, prayer is a transformation of the consciousness of the one who is doing the praying. It's all about consciousness. So someone asked him, so how long are we supposed to pray? He says, pray until you get that yes from within. Seamus knows what I'm talking about. Until that something within says, ah, it starts to arise, like Catherine knew, from the wisdom from within. It's not about what my thoughts were telling me. It's about this something that is greater than all of that, that is seeking our attention, that has always been seeking our attention. It's the clarity amidst the confusion. It's the peace amidst the chaos. It's the love amidst the rancor and the hate and the fear. It's already there, but we have to turn toward it. You know, that's what repent means. Turn toward that something that's greater, and that's the contemplative path that's everywhere revealing itself. So he goes on to speak about this transformation of consciousness. It's to change the one that's doing the praying, the awakening of an inner dialogue that from God's side never stopped. From the universe's side, it never stopped. The universe is always speaking. Are we listening? But it speaks in a different language. When I met Jack, her 9-year-old son, he says, the universe speaks to me in symbols. I wanted to sit at his feet. He was tapping into the wisdom of the universe, just like Catherine is, but it comes from something like a rock. You know, the rock says to me, you know, I know I'm a rock. Do you know who you are? The rock says, I'm at peace. I accept what is. Do you accept things as they are? You know, I'm not chasing after the next rock in life to make me complete. I'm complete within myself. I mean, just something as simple as a rock is profound. The simple, you know what really speaks to me are the flowers. My goodness, they speak to me. The flower is the sex organ of a plant. Now, don't take that the wrong way. And what the flower does, it shows you the beauty of that plant that's offering its vulnerability so that it can receive love from the universe in the form of a butterfly or a bumblebee. And so what if we are that flower? There's a beautiful Sufi saying that says, when the flower blossoms, the bees come uninvited. Now, the flower in me hears, all I'm here to do is blossom. And maybe you, the bumblebees, come because you want to drink the nectar of that flower. It's a metaphor for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. Jesus said to be like a lily of the field. He says, they toil not, neither do they struggle. Yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these humble little flowers. Let those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. So he's saying to me, you know, it's not about getting amassing all the wealth in the world. And I think he had 600 wives. God, that would have been a challenge for anyone. But to be like a flower, you know? So finally he says this, we have imprisoned God in our churches, in our ceremonies, in our small fear-based people. And I now believe that this other universe that we are rightly seeking is not elsewhere, it's not in the future, but it's right in our own hearts and our own heads. It's not about moving from the head into the heart, it's about letting the head and the heart come together. So our thoughts can be loving thoughts, and our emotions, our feelings can be guided by clarity of vision and purpose and intention. And then we're a whole integrated human being. So he says, if we put on the entirely different mind, the mind of Christ, he says, then heaven takes care of itself and in fact begins right now. So it is nothing we have to believe in for later. Prayer of quiet and contemplative prayer of just this offers us no roles, no rituals, no scriptures, no costumes, no gender issues, or correct wordings about which is the right way to argue scripture. He says, maybe that is exactly why it seems so ambiguous and mysterious and rare. The truth doesn't have all that clothing. He goes on to say, you know, it's not a Mormon God, it's not a Christian God, it's not a gay God or a straight God or an American God. He said it's a universal presence that we all get to experience intimately, and this is where we're going to find it. So it's very, very simple. But sometimes the complicated thing is to let go of the way we're seeing things. Now, in this wonderful, I've been watching a lot of Richard Rohr, and I'm kind of full of him. He says, ultimately, Jesus' big message was to not judge it, not to get caught up in the binary mind. And so his simple practice was, in everything in life, whatever life brings you, he says, meet it with a yes. Whatever. Cancer. Yes. A problem. Yes. Meet it with the yes, and then you can use your discernment, you know, but, you know, be discerning, be detached, but don't disengage. So a classic example, I was telling my beloved husband about meeting everything a yes, and he doesn't necessarily see it that way. And so we were driving to the center. It was Wednesday morning, and I'm leading. He's got the dogs in the car. We had to come to the center and do some errands, so we were going to park the car and do this kind of 7:30 in the morning. And we turn on Lily Flag Road, onto Lily Flag Road from here. I go first, and the lady in front of me stops short because she's turning into her driveway. Well, then Trey turns and stops short. I nearly hit her. He nearly hit me. And the traffic, it's rush hour, and they won't let her in. And Trey's kind of sticking out onto Whitesburg Avenue. And I am intuiting rage in the car behind me, knowing that this is a habit to react when traffic goes like that. Well, when she finally did pull in, and we finally moved forward and parked in the church parking lot, Trey came out of the car, and he took her license plate down, and she needs it. And I said, "Honey, but we're safe and sound. I didn't run into her. You didn't run into me. Yes, it was. She was. Yes, she needs to be reprimanded. Yes, probably she needs to be turned in. But we're still here. We can start with the yes and then go on after that. And there's a certain way of playing with this kind of stuff that sets you free, because the ego wants to hold on to resentment and bitterness. Anybody resemble that comment? You know, it wants to be right rather than to be happy. And if we can let go in those little moments, those little glimpses of freedom, then you understand that idea just to be free of your own self. And that's, I love it in our teaching, they have an acronym for sin. Some of you Christians might know what sin is. We have an acronym for it, self-inflicted nonsense. So when he says, go and sin no more, stop creating the struggle within yourself by buying into a limited idea that creates the resistance, the reaction. And so then, you know, the most powerful phrase I've heard between a stimulus and response is that little gap between the stimulus. Here comes the stimulus. Somebody flipped you off, cut you off on the traffic, screaming at you. Then here's the response, but here's the gap. Now, what if we, in that stimulus, we say, yes, maybe they're having a bad day. You know, it is traffic. Paul Fulford was reminding me of a study where they put these enlightened people in a circle where their cars were going round and round. And you know what happened as they were going round and around? Traffic. And they were stalling. And they were realizing that it was their reaction that they were dealing with, not the traffic. When we can realize that we're not dealing with what happens in the world, we're dealing with our response or our reaction to the world. So then Richard Rohr beautifully says, he says, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Oh, let those who have ears to hear. If you live in reaction, if you live in control, then you have a reactive life and you want to control things. But if you live in a beautiful surrendered yes to the awe and the wonder of the moment, to be stunned by what is, and then in that stunnedness, there's a sense of awe. He uses the story at the very beginning of how the universe works, and he tells the story of Moses. And how Moses was in Midian, which is a place of contemplativeness, for 40 years, which means as long as he needed to be there. And 40 years of meditating, all of a sudden what happened was one day a bush was illumined from within. Now, that's not something that just happened after 40 years. The bush was always lit up from within. That's the light of awareness that's within all creation. But he was able to see it after 40 years. And the bush spoke to him. Again, there's that language that speaks differently through images and symbols. And the bush said, take off your shoes, Moses. And the feet represent understanding and metaphysics. So take off what separates you from really understanding. And it said, right where you stand is holy ground. Well, isn't that the message that we're getting from everyone? That Eureka, you were here all along, but I didn't see you. That this is the moment the Lord has made. And then what happens, strangely enough, you begin to see God in everything. You begin to see God in everyone. You begin to see God in the cancer. You begin to see God in the heart attack. You begin to see God in the relationships that don't work out so that we could work out. Because that's what the life is showing us. It's all pointing us to something if we have but eyes to see and ears to hear. When we let go of the binary mind. In Buddhism, they talk about what they call the middle path. And again, the simpler way. The middle path is, and Richard Rohr says this, and Trey disagreed, so I'll share it with you. Richard Rohr said, I don't think the mind can be in the now. He says, the mind by its very nature wants to process the past or wants to project into the future. But the now is not a thought. The now is an experience. And so if you're on the middle path, middle path is living in present moment awareness, and here's the stuff you don't want over here, five-letter words, Tia says, and here's the stuff that you do want. But on the middle path, you don't try to get the stuff you do want, nor do you push away the stuff that you don't want. You're just fully present to, yes, there's a desire, there's a want, there's a preference, there's a hope. I have a lot of hope. I have a big word hope in my garden. I just hope we can all get along. I remember once when Rodney King was beaten when they had the riots in Los Angeles, and he was crying on the news, and he says, can't we all just get along? And I quoted him on Sunday, and I got so many people angry at me because I would quote this man. Maybe it's because he was a black man in Los Angeles, I don't know. But I heard the message, can't we all get along? He was on that middle path. Do we have to fight each other and judge each other and hate each other? Can't we learn to live with one another in this compassionate way? So yeah, that's the middle path. And could we let the middle path teach us as we go through life? I was watching the fires in Australia, and Trey and I have been there, and all the places that we went, I understand that they're maybe no longer. And we were there for 2 weeks. We didn't see one kangaroo. We kept looking for them. We saw some wallabies, but we saw the koala bears, and they were in all the trees. And so being an empath, my heart was kind of breaking to the staggering numbers of death over there. And now the prognosis that so many of the ones that did survive will starve to death because they don't have the green to eat. And there's that tormented thought. But then I just saw a little thing on PBS where the humans were stepping up for the animals, and they were rescuing the koala bears, and they were holding them, and they were rescuing the kangaroos. And the hearts of humanity are opening. And so what if we could just change the way we look at things? We have a poster in the bookstore that says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So what is it gonna take for humanity to open its heart, to have this compassionate expression? Richard Rohr spoke before an audience in Oxford, England. And he was talking, he said, I want to leave you with one story. He said, in New Mexico, where I live, where we have the Center for Action and Contemplation, once a year we have the scientists come in, and they talk about science and spirituality. And he said, I found that the hardest ones to speak spirituality to are people in religions, because they're so caught up in their containers, their silos of belief systems, what's right and what's wrong. But he said, the mystics of our time are the scientists, because they understand, like Einstein did, there is this universal something that is so much greater than we are. And he says, I remember a closing speech from a neurophysicist who was also a rabbi. And he spoke to these scientists and these theologians. And he said, you Christians have gotten our Ten Commandments incorrect. He said, the third commandment was to not take the Lord thy God's name in vain. And I grew up thinking it was God damn it, because my dad would say it all the time. And I used to say he's breaking the third. He said, that's not what it meant at all. He said, in Hebrew, he said, what it really says is not to say the name of God, because God is too mysterious for us to define it or label it in any way. And the name that the Hebrews had given for God was Yahweh. And he said, what's beautiful is that it's a series of vowels with no hard consonants that the tongue or the lips can use. And he says, Yahweh is the name of God, and Yahweh means the breath of life. So he says, when you're born saying Yahweh, and when you leave, you die saying Yahweh. And then he closed with this meditation, and he went, Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh. Do that with me. It's just the simple breath, yeah. And he said the scientists had tears coming down their face because they were all saying the name of God without saying anything. The breath was expressing the name of God. Lastly, I want to close with a little chant, a prayer from my little book called The Gardener. When I think of doing little things with great love, I have garden journals. This time of year, I'm growing seeds in the basement. Rare hot pepper seeds for Trey. I've got some wild blue vines that I'm growing. I'll share these with Jean. I've got some interesting Brandywine and German heirloom tomatoes, which I've yet to plant. Trey always reprimands me, saying I always fail, but I love to do it because the gardener in me loves to do it. This is filled with little stories, and one story was someone asked the gardener, what is your favorite plant in your garden? Surely you must have one favorite. And the gardener says, well, all of the plants are my favorites. He said, some of them are more demanding. They need more care. But I love them just as much. He says, but you know, you're right. There is that one little weed that grows by the side of my door. And it's always there. It needs no attendance. And when I come out, it smiles at me. And he said, and I tell that little plant all my troubles. As you come in the back of the church through the doorways there, on the left-hand side, about this tall is a little morning glory that managed to push herself up through the cracks in the sidewalk, and she has a blossom. And you know, she's just there to be seen. So as you leave, you might acknowledge that she is there, because the gardener and me, you know, all we ever want is to be seen. So here's his little chant for love, since this is the dialogue on love. Here's the gardener. He says, oh God, oh beloved life, warm breeze of light that scatters the sad groans of my soul, unfathomable love that opens the lips of my heart to the golden splendor of your sweetness. Can you feel that your heart opens when you hear that? He says, let me feel again the divine warmth of your words in my heart and the soft caress of your smile before my eyes. Embrace me in your arms so that I can lose myself in your heart and discover in the bottomless depths of your presence, far away from the heartbreaking deception of separation, away from the pitiful cries of this discarded soul. Oh God, my love, my life, what a long path that leads to your throne. How cruel the sweet wound of your calling in my heart, of the memory of everything that I see. Dearly beloved, it's hard when my eyes fill up. I would like to be like the oak, firm in the ground, so that my feet are never weakened along the path. I would love to be as patient as the olive tree, so that the new stems of life could be reborn from my old and rough soul. I would like to have the knowledge of the old evergreen oak, that one with the high branches that looks at the still dawn and knows your silent paths. I would like to be like the generous almond tree that's offering its flowers on the bare and dried up bark and enjoys the delight of the cherry tree that calls the birds in the distance so that they come and eat your fruit, because we're all connected in this relationship. I would like to have the singing voice of the poplar tree and the gratefulness of the birch that raises its white hands into the sky so that it keeps singing in tune with your praises. I would like to be humble like the violets and pure like the roses. I would like to be simple like the daisies and fertile like a field of wheat so that I could cover the earth with the light of your love. But it has been your will, beloved, that I should be a simple human being. And as I cannot now aspire to be more than what you've wanted me to be, teach me at least to accept myself as that simple human being. And let me embrace myself at your feet as the ivy embraces the oak's trunk, so that I can immerse myself in the jasmine scent of your presence. And let your fragrance fill my heart as it blossoms in the garden of love, revealing itself to itself. Rumi says, if the beloved is everywhere, the lover is simply its veil. But when the living itself becomes the friend, then lovers disappear. And all that exists is the beloved. And that's what you and I are. So I invite you to just close your eyes after those beautiful words and feel the love. Oh my God, Eureka, you never went anywhere. Huh? And the little act of great love sometimes can be just to put your hand on your heart and to feel the heartbeat, the constancy of that love. The little act of taking the breath. Breath, spirit never leaves its creation. Huh. And we are that creation. Richard Rohr said, when Noah made his covenant after the flood, he made his covenant to all of creation, not to just humanity. And so what if God is here for all of creation and we are that? The tree, the rock, the bird, the fish. It is all that same presence. It's all that same love, and we are that. It's so simple and yet so profound. So take a deep breath. Give a sigh for the divine. Ah, know that you have arrived in the simplicity of just that.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.